Good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. I think I might safely claim that Oregon's most famous politicians are Wayne Morse, Tom McCall, Mark Hatfield, and Kate Brown, at least among we who are the current arbiters of such distinctions. And Oregon's most infamous servant of the people is Bob Packwood, an allegation rarely disputed by any who remember him. For this program, I complete a trio of satires I wrote for my newspaper, the North Coast Times-Eagle, during the last presidential campaign of the 20th century. The theme of all three was to pillory political satraps who think they are worthy to be leaders of the people, despite their dubious personal and political histories. The dreamscape town hall, where they are met and distillated, is the fantastical top of the Astor, perched like a crown on the eighth floor of the John Jacob Astor Hotel in a downtown Astoria of a parallel universe. The first lampooned the two presidential aspirants of 1996, incumbent Bill Clinton, who will most probably reverse roles with his wife and first lady in this universe, and Bob Dole, who did go on to much greater celebrity as America's Viagra spokesman. I called it the transmutation of Billy Bob. Last week was a burlesque of Newt Gingrich's spaced-out concept of democracy and repellent pomposity, neither of which seemed to have mellowed any since then. Newt's here is what I called that one. So once more into the breach of plausibility. This episode with Bob Packwood, who has a creepy resemblance to this year's Republican challenger, the master sexist pig himself. I hear Dr. Peabody tell Sherman to set the controls of the way back time machine to alternate Astoria in the last years of the previous millennium, beamed to the fantabulous top of the Astor. Bozo Bob's Retreat. It was an eclectic night at Astoria's first-rate night spot, Top of the Astor. The Columbia River sparkled with a dozen anchored ships whose city lights glowed like jeweled tiaras. Belts of stars slashed the sky outside the many tall windows 8 stories above the street. The bar was crowded as usual with diverse fusions. The nightly throng of high-toned coastal gentry tippled at their usual places near the bar. Members of the North Coast Symphonic Band wet their whistles in post-rehearsal tradition at a large table next to a wall. An ocean research ship's crew and scientists were at the bar and nearby tables. A large swarm of SWAT cops from Portland were in for a riotous birthday party following riot training at Camp Rialia. And two persons who appeared to be Astoria clowns, the city's cultural gift to the world, sat at a corner next to a pair of windows. I was certain one of them was Bob Packwood. I was at the bar indulging my twin pleasures of wine and chatter. I asked a SWAT cop which side he would be on in the civil war between rich and poor, just as the two bozos entered. One wore a red wig and bulbous cherry nose. "Hi, I'm the mayor of Astoria," he said to everybody with an exaggerated grin. The other bozo's face was gray and grim. He grasped his companion's arm and pulled him along as he literally slunk to a table. My friend Rio Rita was bartending and cocktailing the floor. "Do you know what Mark Twain said about Congress?" I asked her, and answered before she could reply. He said Congress was America's only criminal class. I pointed to the two clowns, and I think that sad-looking bozo is one of the biggest crooks of them all. "The pariah can sneak into Oregon, but he can't hide," I said to her. "He better not stand on my toes," she said. "I'll bite his tongue off." I approached the table and sat down. "I know who you are," I said to the grim-faced clown. "Grease paint doesn't hide your thief's sneer or your molester's leer." He turned his thickly paint-smeared face away toward a window next to the table. Outside, a dim chalk line scratched across the dark sky. preceded by a tiny light. Night jet to Seattle. And I'm the mayor of Astoria, the other bozo repeated. I'm not Bob Packwood, bozo one said. What would I be doing here if I was Bob Packwood? Then who are you? Who I am is none of your business, he hissed. Astoria clowns remain anonymous. Except the mayor, bozo too, laughed merrily. I know the mayor of Astoria, and you're not him, I said, mimicking a line about John Kennedy. But this joker's Bob Packwood, the worst senator in Oregon's history, a disgrace to all honest citizens of this and every state, a criminal and a molester of women. Bozo Bob glared at me. He was the smartest man in the Senate, Mayor Bozo protested. He did a lot of good for Oregon. He disgraced Oregon, I insisted. This state used to be known for the honesty and integrity of its politicians. Even St. Mark has tarnished us. But this clown is a rapacious and shameless crook. His entire career in the Senate has been as a front man for anyone with money enough for his expensive and influential services. He has given a new name to philandering. Rude and crude sexual assaults on women are now called packwooding. He supported women, Mayor Bozo argued. He mauled them, I retorted. He's not the only senator who ever used his power to seduce women, Mayor Bozo said. Nor is he the only senator bought and paid for by big business, or who ever sold his vote like a lottery ticket, I said. But he was especially greedy among that pack of high-priced jackals, and he was gaudy about it. His richly lucrative breakfasts with lobbyists who paid large sums to break bacon with him are infamous. That's the way business is conducted in Washington, D.C., Mayor Bozo proclaimed. The senator has always been very smart about the way politics and clear-eyed about his opportunities. He was always the first hog to the trough and the last swilling, I scoffed. The political world is a Darwinian swamp in which one must eat or be eaten, Mayor Bozo said archly. The senator developed an understanding that it is better to be eater than eaten. But he ate himself, I said with a cruel laugh. I glanced out the window. The jet trail had fattened into a moonlit intestine that swirled over the top of the aster. I like entrepreneurial men, but you can't find them in Astoria, I overheard a woman at a nearby table. Men proportionately have smaller butts than women, a man at the bar said to Rio Rita. But men are much bigger asses, she replied. A woman passing by our table said to a companion, if I had a penis, I wouldn't have to clean house. What happened to Senator Packwood makes the Inquisition look like a panty raid, Mayor Bozo said. He's accused of kissing women, not beating, not raping, kissing. Ted Kennedy killed a girl, and he's still in the Senate. And O.J. Simpson got away with murder, I said, but he'll never sell orange juice again. Teddy will never be president because he killed Mary Jo. Bob Packwood abused his power to debauch women, but he didn't have the juice to prevent exile and ostracism once they finally stood up to him, even though it took a few years. I wagged a finger at Bozo Bob. A friend of mine says you should do court-ordered volunteer work at every woman's crisis center and safe house in Oregon for at least 6 years, one full Senate term, and be resentenced for another 6 years if you step on any woman's toes at any time, I said. Only a few women complained about the senator's sexual advances, Mayor Bozo said. Most women were flattered when the senator came on to them. I looked scornfully at Bozo Bob. You're no different than most gene-defective wimps who have to amass material wealth or power to seduce women because you just don't have the real natural vigor to impress them, I said. The Republican Party seems to attract a majority of impotent predators like you. Macho milksops. Power is the sign of a supreme male, Bozo Bob pontificated. Women know that a man who is rich and powerful is genetically superior. Women know that men who attempt to dominate them might have big fists to beat them with, but probably possess teeny peenies, I said. Real men know that women are their equal or even their superior and don't give a damn. I stared at Bozo Bob and thought of something John Randolph said about his fellow Senator Henry Clay that better fit Packwood nearly two centuries later. This being so brilliant yet so corrupt, which like a rotten mackerel by moonlight, shines and stinks. Randolph might also have been describing Packwood's quick dissent among his colleagues when he called another senator the most contemptible and degraded of beings, whom no man ought to touch unless with a pair of tongs. This country is swerving from democracy to casino oligarchy, and you are a thoroughly corrupt example of our warp, I said to Bozo Bob. And for your crimes, we, whom you have robbed, are now supposed to pay you an annual stipend of $89,000, which is more than most of us make in a decade. You should be put on trial instead. He deserves the money for all the years he spent representing Oregon in the Senate, Mayor Bozo said. That's like saying we should have paid Benedict Arnold, Jefferson Davis, and Spiro Agnew for their services after they were expelled from public office, I countered. Nixon got his pension after Watergate, Mayor Bozo insisted. I disagreed. Nixon was only a crook. This creep's a crook and a degenerate and doesn't deserve a nickel. If he's an honorable man like he claims to be, he won't take the money. He earned the money, Mayor Bozo said. He proves crime pays, I retorted scornfully. If he had an ounce of common decency, he would turn the money down. What do you expect him to live on? He embezzled enough for a dozen lifetimes. He can't even pay his rent, Mayor Bozo persisted. He spent all his money trying to stay in the Senate. Commit suicide and save us the money, I urged Bozo Bob. You're a broken man. You're a disgrace to everyone who voted for you. Suicide is your last chance to redeem your honor. I looked out the window, down eight stories to the street. Why not now? I stood up and placed my chair next to the window and opened it. Just step up on the sill, and it's over in a second. You will finally be doing something good for Oregon. Bozo Bob recoiled, appalled. Rio Rita walked to the table and tried to quiet us. Lower your voices to your IQ levels, she scolded. We're practicing democracy, Mayor Bozo said. We're arguing over this odious man's soul, I said. If this clown is who I think he is, he doesn't have one, she said in disgust. A loud chorus of SWAT cops sang happy birthday to one of their comrades and beat their table with truncheons. We're not as loud as they are, Mayor Bozo complained. They're cops. You're not, Rita said, and walked back to the bar. One of us used to be a United States Senator, I said to her back. I'm the mayor of Astoria, Mayor Bozo said grandly. A rabble of politicians noisily entered the bar, and after pressing flesh with everyone they looked around the lounge to recognize, sat down at tables near the door where everyone entering would have to acknowledge them. I saw city council persons, county commissioners, state legislators. Only the governor seemed to be missing, and the real mayor of Astoria. Half a dozen walked up to our table and shook hands all around. I'm the mayor of Astoria, Mayor Bozo proclaimed, but attention was momentarily riveted toward Bozo Bob, who shirked from their glances. I think I know that clown, I heard one say, sitting at a table clustered with his partisan peers. Who? The one says he's mayor? Another asked, looking over at us. The other clown. Just about everybody who wanted to be Oregon's new senator was in the bar. DeFazio, Smith, Roberts, and Paulus, each at the center of small swarms of rooters. But I didn't see Wyden, who was still maybe looking for Bosnia. Less a coin ought to be senator because you cheated him out of it in 92, I said to Bozo Bob, who seemed to be averting his face from the contenders. Wayne Morse would have trounced you and got his job back in 74 if he hadn't died on his shield. Did you off him? Wyden walked in like he had just discovered Bosnia. DeFazio jumped up from a table and punched him in the nose. Smith grabbed Wyden from the back and urged DeFazio to hit him again. Wyden laughed through blood dripping from his nostrils. "I'm gonna win," he shouted. Norma Paulus stormed over to our table. "I know who you are," she shouted at Bozo Bob. "Go for the window," I said. "It's your only chance." Instead, Bozo Bob pulled Mayor Bozo from his chair and made a dash for the door. The place erupted. Everybody was fighting each other like the glorious old days of Astoria's universally notorious Shanghai saloons. Tables, chairs, bottles, and bodies went every which way. The North Coast Symphonic Band struck up a rousing melody while the SWAT cops walloped everybody nonpartisanly. Rio Rita came over to the table. "How did you start that?" she demanded. I took a sip of Red Death. "They're voting for our new U.S. Senator," I said cheerfully. A broken chair flew through the window I had opened for Packwood's exit and crashed down on the sidewalk 8 floors below. Rita sat down, wiped the rim of Bozo Bob's glass with her fingers, and downed his drink in a gulp. Through the flurry of bodies and furniture, I could see him running for the door with Paulus behind, slapping him on the head with a mail-in ballot. Mayor Bozo was kicking a county commissioner, a fellow I believe owned a fuel dock. "Have you thought about being senator?" Rita asked, rubbing her finger over Mayor Bozo's abandoned glass. "Why not you?" She clinked her glass against mine. "God bless America," she said, and swallowed it whole. And as a bit of an epilogue to Bozo Bob's retreat, Bob Packwood has since parlayed his reputation for sexual barbarity into a successful post-Senate career as a shameless political lobbyist, as so many disgraced politicians are able to do. I have searched available media for any reference that Packwood has denounced Donald Trump. Not a word. And now, a discourse on the epidemic of evil clowns that seems to have convulsed the country and spread across the world, which rebounds directly back to the original subject, bad bozos. This by Mary Valley, the explanation for October's clown hysteria is staring us in the face. Creepy clowns are everywhere. Rumors of clowns are causing hysteria. There are legends of clowns getting shot. Law enforcement has had it. It's October in the United States, so a clown panic isn't all that odd, really. This feels sort of normal. When I was a kid, there were other scares, such as the legendary razor blades in Halloween apples. Certain rock songs, when played backward on a turntable, were said to pay tribute to the devil. Dungeons and Dragons, a game only responsible for massive Cheetos and Mountain Dew consumption by boys in basements, was chock full of evil. Strangers roamed the suburbs in vans, looking for children to snatch. The killer clown thing has been around for a while, too. Stephen King, who has spoken out against the clown panic, contributed a lot to it with his 1986 novel, It. There was the menacing clown doll in Poltergeist. Heath Ledger's scary Joker in the Batman film, The Dark Knight, for which he received a posthumous Oscar. Juggalos, which are insane clown posse fans, and so much more. Put all of this together, add the internet, and voila! A clown panic that is causing school closings and letters from principals and cops and the banning of clownwear. It is apparently spread to other nations. I have no doubt that if I were walking down the street and noticed a clown in my peripheral vision, then confirmed it with a turn of my head, I would scream, because the clown doesn't belong there, because the clown is out of context, because there is a clown panic going on and the clown's only reason for existing is spreading fear and dread. But what do the creepy clowns mean, ring a million hands? Perhaps it's just for fun. Perhaps it's anxiety over the economy, global warming, social media. Bear with me. This is kind of a stretch. But could it be that a very big, creepy clown is actually showing up and menacing us in our streets, woods, and schools? That the fear he inspires is spreading and it's unclear what is true and what is not? This clown's mask is a horror show in itself. He wears a terrible wig, and although it is said he kids a lot, is never funny. One of the reasons that people cite for disliking clowns is the notion of the nearly human or uncanny valley, where you will find chill-inducing things like clowns, marionettes, monkeys, masks, mannequins, certain robots, scarecrows. In the 1980s, a time when nuclear war was very much on the minds of the people, we had a president who was uncanny too. I remember getting a bag of Republican jelly beans with an elephant on the package when trick-or-treating on Halloween 1980. Reagan was famously fond of them, and holding the bag and thinking, this elephant is cute, but I heard someone say he didn't want to die if Reagan was elected president because Reagan was going to start a nuclear war. Ronald Reagan, with his strange, molded, too dark hair and rouged cheeks and permanent smile, was everything horrifying about the phrase all-American. So twinkly and grandfatherly he was, but he also scared the hell out of many children who feared that nuking the Russians was going to happen if you said the wrong thing in front of Grandpa, and then the Russians would nuke back, and next thing you know, the skies are gray with fallout. Americans bought Reagan's act, though he was as creepy as they come, a poor simulation of humanity, a bona fide authoritarian wrapped in the cozy trapping of Grandpa, sort of like the sadistic, child-stalking Santa Claus. Of course, Reagan is the very soul of humanity compared with great killer clown Donald Trump, but most people are. I've heard a few people say he makes me nostalgic for George W. Bush. I think this clown epidemic is a form of real-time trauma play. Right now in this nation, on this planet, a bona fide human-like sociopath is very close to grabbing the one ring of power, or the former one ring of power that is still pretty powerful. China may be the Coke of today, and we just may be the Pepsi, which might partially explain the second-rate, rinky-dink, two-bit hustler who has fooled millions of people into thinking he somehow cares about them, courting steel workers as he loads his buildings with Chinese steel, pretending to care about small business owners while notoriously stiffing them for decades. Somewhere in their heads, they must understand that they are not acting in their best interest, and this gigantic killer clown is using their despair and hopelessness against them by masterly pulling their anger strings, turning them, too, into ugly, disjointed residents of his angry, uncanny valley. And Trump's dark undertow is pulling other killer clowns out of the shadows. Emboldened, they walk the streets, bearing the possibility that we, as a nation, may be stepping off a cliff of denial into a valley of hatred, fear, and fascism. Obviously, it's time to panic over imaginary clowns. And that was The Explanation for October's Clown Hysteria Staring Us in the Face by Mary Valley, who wrote this for The Guardian. She has also written for the Los Angeles Times, the Los Angeles Review of Books, Salon, and others. She lives in Baltimore, Maryland. And sort of as a postscript, I would like to respond to the satanic clown controversy with a reprise of an earlier program this year as my personal tribute to amateur heirs of Scaramouche, who act as good clowns rather than bozo bobs. So now let us praise famous clowns. I don't mean the clown circus of presidential candidates provided by the gruesomely odious Primevals, GOP, that masquerade as a political party dedicated to abolish everything sensible, humane, and humorous in human governance. The clowns we celebrate are Finnish, LOL, Lolgers, who scathingly mock a right-wing group that calls itself Soldiers of Odin, after the old Viking war god. The proto-Vikings are sour, ultra-right nationalists who are little different than American white supremacists, except perhaps their allegiance to a pagan deity, and there is more than a passing resemblance to leather-jacketed biker gangs, images of Odin on the back, horned Viking helmets instead of Nazi coal buckets. They especially oppose Middle Eastern refugees and conduct vigilante patrols in Finnish cities to protect the citizenry from foreign erosion of Finlandia culture. These xenophobic bullies are contraposed with partial slapstick by the clown-frocked Lowellers skipping through the streets with feather dusters, toilet brushes, and lollipops. The clowns flout the armed Odinites with LOL, laughing out loud, and lots of love, brandishing lollipops. Send in the clowns. That was something I wrote, which is, of course, deserving of a disclaimer, as is also Bozo Bob's retreat, and is my opinion, and perhaps my opinion only, in all the parallel universes of clowns and black holes. I close this program with a chilling portrait of a latter-day Dorian Gray by Richard North Patterson. The man who would be our president is a liar and charlatan, devoid of conscience or empathy for others, alive to nothing but his own ungovernable desires, and beset by multiple pathologies which metastasize under pressure. The chapters of history are filled with such men, and they do not end well. He is not merely unqualified, though that is more than enough, nor is he merely a dreadful human being. He is a very sick one, fighting to become the most dangerous man on earth. Wherever Trump goes, pathology follows. And a poem by Lauren Goodman. Poem for the government. I'm writing some poems for the government, but I can't talk about them now. I can't talk at all. The writing has been going well, on schedule, and all expenses have been taken care of. I'm not at liberty to discuss the secretive nature of my work, which demands that I write in silence and disgust and under an assumed name. My work for the government is not only confidential, it is gross. Many lives hang in the balance. I'm also writing some poems that aren't for the government, but now those seem about nothing at all. I don't know where or how many poems will be used, but I want them to be foolish and deadly. That I write in silence and seclusion and under this parasol for the government, my tiny son at my feet, makes me extremely poetic. I think of splashes and hear the poems I am writing in this paradise, one of which is really for you. I include it in the government batch, perhaps to better include you in our lives. And that was by Lauren Goodman, Poem for the Government. This has been Michael McCusker. I leave you with the immortal maxim of Peanut Charlie Brown. It always looks darkest before it gets totally black.